Pubcast.
So what I do encourage people to do, including this one, is, you know, give it a go, you know, for a period of time so that you actually can experiment whether what it's actually doing to you, not whether you like it or not, but is it actually helpful?
Welcome to the Liberated Healer Podcast, where we touch on a variety of topics in the world of spirituality, energetic healing, and everything in between and beyond. Take an adventure on a shooting star with your hosts, Gina and Linnea, offering their wisdom, guidance, and everlasting love and support.
Hello, everybody. This is Gina Cavalier. This is Liberated Healer Podcast. And today we have an author, a Jungian psychotherapist, and co-guiding teacher at the New York Zen Center, Koshin Pali Ellison, who at 8 years old told his mother he wanted to be a Zen Buddhist monk. And today he is, and he's dedicated to serving people. And so welcome. Hi.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So are you referred to Koshin usually? Is that
Koshin is great. Yeah.
So, you know, you're really the first monk I've had on. So I'm going to ask a lot of probably might be seeing remedial questions for you. But I'd like to have people have a foundation about this wonderful journey and, you know, getting into service. And what is it? What does the modern monk also look like? Because a lot of people have, you know, in their mindset, what a monk means. And you tell us kind of what that, how you explain that to other people and what that means.
Yeah. So it's a question I think a lot about and try to keeping it fresh. So for me, it is a person who has decided to dedicate their life, or I don't even know if decided, but they make all of their decisions from how we get up in the morning to how we go to sleep to how we talk and walk and for the benefit of others. And so, and sometimes that's misunderstood because you think it doesn't include yourself. It does include yourself, but it's how do I really take responsibility for the impact I'm having in this life? And how do I maintain a tradition? Like in my case, I'm a Zen Buddhist. And so that's a more specific and different than like a Catholic monk or a rabbi or an imam. But it's in my tradition, it's really, and how am I supporting the tradition and making it available for generations to come? So that's really becomes less about me, which is so relaxing for me.
Yeah.
And more about, wow, how can I leave something behind that is of use and that is useful? Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to become, when, you know, I've been in service, I would call in service for 3 years, which didn't happen until I turned 50. So, but, you know, I was suffering through that before I got to that level and decided that was my whole thing. And now I feel free. There is a liberation that, you know, I'm, you know, doing the best I can on a daily basis to heal myself first. So did you have to go through that self-healing? I'm obviously you did, in, you know, finding different teachers. And can you talk a little bit about that process for you?
Yeah, so for me, I grew up in a very challenging house with really amazing people whose actions did not always match what they valued.
Yeah.
And so I grew up with lots of physical and sexual and verbal abuse and in the house, and which was very difficult. And just objectively hard and confusing, because I was always so clear that actually, wait a second, but these people value really beautiful things and yet are allowing terrible things. And so it really began a journey for me to say, how do we close that gap? How do I close that gap inside of me between what I say I care about and what I'm actually doing and actually saying? And so that really started, I would say, with some rigor when I was around 11, when I met my first karate teacher. And it was not one of those karate schools with kids classes. It was just like adults and this little tiny 11-year-old kid. And we used to sit in seiza where your legs are underneath you and on this hardwood floor. And I just remember the teacher, who was really my first teacher, you know, outside of school. And he used to circle us very slowly and say, you'll never be free until you can be still with your pain.
Yes.
And for me, that was so, like, as an 11-year-old kid, I felt like I was learning superpower stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and I realized, like, wow, you know, it felt like it was also the beginning of great compassion for me, because I realized most people don't know how to do that. Or they feel the pain and kind of jump, you know, or this is uncomfortable and distract ourselves, pick up our phone or whatever that is. And, you know, it just means that we're a living being. Because living beings, even our little three-celled hydra friends who are like one of the first little animals that still exist, you know, they move away from things that they don't like and they move towards food. So we're just like that. And so learning how to have tenderness and compassion for me was the beginning of that.
Yeah, because you were also bullied at school. And that you talk about in your book, Untangled, and you have a couple other books as well. And so you were uncomfortable in your home and in your outside life and at a young age. And it's very scary. And you even knew that you had this, you know, grounded soul. I mean, telling your mom that you wanted to be a monk at that such young age, you know, you knew this path. So, yeah, that's really beautiful. And you do a lot of work on grief. And because we're recording this on October 11th, and, you know, the world just shifted a few days ago, propelling us potentially into all kinds of different darkness. And grief comes along with that loss. And so I kind of like to lean into that with you, because I think that's such a hard topic is grief. You know, you were saying a loss of pets, a loss of family members, a loss of job, a lot. And that hopelessness that comes with grief is what actually I feel like takes people down pretty bad. Mm. So when you have this in your sessions or in your educational system around grief, what are some of the things that you can help that talk about that help people through those things, you know, in a Zen way?
I don't know about in a Zen way, but I'll do my best.
Yeah. I think everything you do sounds Zen for some reason.
What helps with grief? Well, realizing that we have it is the beginning to me. And sometimes, you know, in, you know, grief work that we do here at the center, we have, you know, grief groups running every 8 weeks and from people all over the world. And what's amazing about those groups is that some of the people, it's very fresh, like, oh, my partner just died last week, or, you know, my child died by suicide, mm-hmm. which is more and more and more. And some are like, wow, you know, my friend died 20 years ago. Or my mother died 30 years ago, and I'm just getting to it. So I think it's always important to honor everyone's process is different. And some people are saying like, oh, I'm, you know, one of the worst things that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross did was create those five stages of grief, in my opinion. And because people tend to feel like, oh, I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing the five stages or whatever that is. And, or people just say, you know, get over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, you could say, was what was she was so magnificent at, and her incredible gift.
Absolutely.
Was listening. Mm. That she, her books are filled with stories of people that she was with, so detailed that you could feel like she was nowhere else in those conversations. So amazing. So I think that's also a value in Zen, like to be nowhere else, right? And so how do we learn how to do that with our grief? How do we learn how to actually not evaluate too soon? I remember when my grandmother died, which was some time ago, you know, and I was inconsolable for months. I was like curled up in a fetal position, wailing and rocking myself, and couldn't work. I couldn't really function for about a month. And she and I were so close, and it made sense. And she even said, you know, when I go, this is going to be very hard, so please don't try to do anything. She kind of knew, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just really important to remember that find your way and get the help that you can. And there are so many wonderful resources out there. And so to do it alone only is really, really hard. And reach out. And there are places of refuge, sometimes where we don't expect it.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Just find the tools. Don't feel shameful about your plight. Or, you know, whatever speaks to you, you know, make a list, call, reach out to people. If you want to do it in secret, there's books or there's online clubs. There's all kinds of ways, but absolutely, you know, that's kind of why we do this show. You don't have to be out there in suffering by yourself, you know, secretly be watching a video and feeling the energy of healing. Like just us talking about this high level energy is raising the vibration. Maybe molecules in the world, but the more that we do it for each other, you know, collectively, is a beautiful thing. Can you talk about a little bit about the Buddhist part of the Zen teaching? You know, it's such a big question, I know that, but what is your something that you kind of explain about the Buddhist part? Because I feel like that's a specific
You mean about grieving?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, as a whole, because isn't there a Buddhist, a lot of different, you know, there are things about suffering and pain and healing that, right? And I mean, just in that topic matter for being a Buddhist and. Mm.
Yeah, I would say, you know, in many ways you could say that. That the Four Noble Truths, so I'll talk about that. So that's actually what the Untangle book is about. So it's the foundational teaching of this guy named Shakyamuni Buddha, this like dude, you know, this guy who was, you know, just a regular person who, you know, when he was born, it was prophesied that he'd either be a great spiritual teacher or a great king. And his father was a king, so the father was like, well, why don't you be that, you know? So he was born like many of us, if we have parents that, you know, want us to be like them, right? So he was born like that. And so the father kept him quite distracted because he didn't want him to be thinking big existential questions because then he might go another way. And at a certain point, you know, which I think is like many of us, is that he got really curious about what was beyond what he knew. like what kind of that moment when sometimes you like just put down your phone and you're like, what don't I know?
Mm-hmm.
And he just, and he realized that the whole world, he had not really let it in. And so he went beyond that wall of where he was and encountered a very old person, a very sick person, and a very dead person.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that is incredibly important because he understood that, my goodness, like, is this is going to happen to all of us? And like, you know, we know now that we have many cosmetic and, you know, industries dedicated to almost like keeping all of that at bay. Like if I look good enough or I take enough supplements or whatever that is, I won't, maybe it won't happen to me, you know, and yet it will, of course. And so what he decided to do is like, well, I need to look into these questions. You know, so what is life? If I'm afraid of that happening to me, that means my fear is controlling me. Mm-hmm. So I tried lots of different spiritual practices. I feel like that's super contemporary too. Like tried an app, he was on the Calm app, he was on 10% Happier. He was like, you know, trying a lot of different things, you know, a little yoga, a little, you know, crystals or all kinds of things, right? To try to find meaning and connection. And at a certain point, he realized, like, I got to sit down. You know, here we go with, like, you know, learning how to be still with your pain. I have to sit down under this tree, which is became known as the Bodhi tree, and face my fear. Like all the things I'm afraid of, and I'm not going to get up until I see through it. And so the biz is the big Buddhist thing.
Okay. And
the big Buddhist thing is that he didn't get up. So he got scared. He got worried. He got tempted. He got, you know, it's kind of like the temptations of Christ also, you know, like that similar story. Mm-hmm. And but yet he didn't move. He just stayed right there. And what he saw is that all the things he was afraid of just arose and fell. And it wasn't actually a big deal. So his habit of wanting to distract himself or go somewhere else, try something else, when he stopped doing that, what he found was that he could actually be quite courageous and strong. And so when he, in the morning of that night, he said, oh, like what he saw was that, oh, I'm building the house of sorrow here.
Yeah.
I'm creating what's hard. I'm creating the tangle. I'm doing this. And so I'm vowing now to not do that anymore. I'm not going to keep doing, building this house of sorrow.
Yeah.
Building this entangled mess. And so then his teaching was on the Four Noble Truths. And the first one is that in life that there's suffering, that there's, we get entangled, we get confused. And this is different than pain. You know, like, of course there's pain in life, but the entanglement is kind of like how we make things more complicated than they are.
We do a lot, and especially in this modern life.
Very popular.
It's a very popular thing. It'd probably have a million gazillion followers if we just had it.
Totally.
Instagram that just said, yeah, complicate life, sign here.
I know. Yeah. And then, and so then he started there. And I remember actually as a young boy reading that and saying, like, in life there's suffering. It's like, wow, thank you. Yes, there is. Yes. And then he said, you know, that also the second nobility, the nobility is that there's a nobility to recognizing too that, like, wow, I get really messed up in my thoughts. And so there's a nobility to that. And then the second nobility is that, yeah, greed, resentment, and delusion, make sure that I stay in that bad feeling of that pebble in my shoe, like, because we just like want things to be different than they are. Yeah. And
we can't really think our way through that.
No, we just have to see it and be like, oh yeah, I'm doing that thing again. I'm holding on to that story that I suck, or that I'm just envious of what other people have, or whatever that is. It's just like we have to see, like, oh yeah, look at me doing that crazy thing that doesn't make any sense, you know? And then the third one is that their nobility said, we can change. It's like, but we have to go through the first two.
Yeah.
We have to like really, you know, do the work. As you were asking about earlier, like, yeah, we have to do the work of really understanding. But then it's not just understanding. We have to go into the fourth nobility, which is the path, which is action.
Yeah.
You know, so then we have to like really behave differently, think differently, act differently, speak differently. And he's very clear about all of those things. And so in Untangled, we kind of go through that whole journey, which is amazing. And, you know, one of the things that was super challenging is that I see myself as a student and a teacher. And so I felt like it was the most important is not just keep it theoretical, because everyone could Google what the Four Noble Truths are. They can Google like what the Eightfold Path is. But how do we learn how to walk together? So I wanted to share what I was learning about it alongside everyone.
Yeah, and you're building a tribe, and I think in one of your interviews I was listening, and you know, sitting with people that are lucky enough to be in your studio in New York or on Zoom, but you know, sitting in this circle and you know, doing this work together, you know, is such a really just finding that tribe, you know, also exiting the things that aren't working for you anymore, just because you grew up in a certain location or around a certain family or friend group, learning how to, if that's not serving you anymore, let go with love so you can go towards the things that are resonating with you more. You know, I think there's a process that with the modern society of people, they feel very, it burdens them greatly, especially if they're sensitive, to walk away from things that aren't serving them anymore. It's really hard to say, that's a toxic relationship that I'm recognizing now. Mm-hmm. And getting the courage, like you said, the word courage, it takes a lot of courage. There's like to build up that muster to say, I'm sorry, I have to let this go with love. You know, just it's not serving me anymore. It causes anxiety in me and suffering in ways, and it triggers me constantly or whatever, right? Is there anything you can say about that? Because I think that everybody has, until they perfect that self-love or that ability to do that. And I spent many years holding on to relationships that were just terrible for me and trying to make it fit because I knew him a long time. And that was the only reason why I was holding on to that relationship. Well, I've been friends with that person for 20 years. So I can't, but I've been trying the whole 20 years to not be anxious around them or not feel bad around them. Mm. So the let go, you know, is there any advice on the let go?
Yeah, like you hear that a lot, you know, letting go or shedding something. And for me, what has been super helpful is to really find first, you know, what's the benefit I have of staying a certain way? Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, actually Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha, used this great image that I find super helpful, that he says like a cart, you know, that's going down like this dirt road. Remember when there were dirt roads? And it eventually makes like a rut, right? And so that the wheels like go into this, like these little, almost like ditches, you know? And our brains are kind of like that, actually, you know? And if we keep thinking a certain way, we'll keep thinking a certain way, and we'll keep doing things a certain way and talking to ourselves and others in a certain way. And so it's learning how to, what's beautiful about, you know, community and good therapy or, you know, just good relationships or good friendships is that we learn how to get out of the cart together and lift it up, which is heavy, and take it out of the rut and find a new groove, literally. Mm. And very soon after you do that, you know, in this one parable, you know, the cart falls back in the rut. And so like, okay, just don't make a story about it. Like, oh, many people, like when we start to change, they want it just to change. Doesn't work like that.
No.
We have to practice. So one of the things I love, you know, reminding myself of is like that it's really about learning how to fall down and get up. And the attitude that for me is the most important is like the attitude when I fall down and become like, or I'm a jerk, or I go back into some old pattern that's like so unhelpful.
Yeah. And you can recognize it after a while. You're like, oh, I don't want to wear this today that I got rid of.
Yeah. And just learning how to be super tender in those moments, you know, yeah. And oh, I fell down. Oh, yeah. And now I'm back. I can actually, because what's so important is the attitude and learning how just to get back up.
I think it's very, I have to just say, I've only had one therapist my whole life and he was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to send, after this, I'm going to send this link to him. You have the exactly same mannerisms of him. You look like him and you have the same, like the head nodding and stuff. And he really literally helped me through my suicidal ideation. He helped me through a date rape that I had. He helped me through so many things. And I just find you guys are kind of doppelgangers, same energy. But I like that you're, you know, you're this Zen Buddhist and he's a therapist. And that's, it's almost like you guys have the same energy. But that's also another, what I wanted to bring out is like, whatever you resonate with, it doesn't have to be a label, right? It doesn't have to, and you know, it's just, you don't have to have like this end goal to come to like, say your studio to be a Buddhist. You might just need support through grief or, you know, it's, and you can dabble in all these different little things and find what works for you. And I think that, that freedom to, you don't have to fall into an entire philosophy. You know what I'm saying? I think sometimes that makes people get stuck too. That they, totally. Right. I'm sure people say that a lot in, you know, when they're asking you, do I have to commit to being a Buddhist or
we make such crazy demands on ourselves as opposed to like, let me do this and see how it rolls, you know? And at the same time, you know, we can always like kind of stick our toe in a million places and then wonder why we are not changing. Mm-hmm. So what I do encourage people to do, including this one, is, you know, give it a go, you know, for a period of time so that you actually can experiment whether what it's actually doing to you, not whether you like it or not, but is it actually helpful? So sometimes when we just go to like one class or one, whatever it is, we're like, I don't know. We actually often are speaking and thinking from the rut mind, because the rut mind doesn't like to be uncomfortable, right? And so sometimes we like go to, and actually very popular is like people go to meditation here and like, oh, I'm really bad meditator because I'm thinking, right? I hear this all the time. I was thinking I'm really bad at it. Well, that is so good to know, because a healthy brain has about 100 thoughts per second. We're only aware of like one or two. And so if you're not thinking, you should go to the hospital immediately. Because it means that you're flatlining or something, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's a really interesting and strange expectation we have. Like, oh, if I do meditation, I'll be like, you know, the Time magazine cover of that woman meditating on a beach, like, you know, in the Bahamas. It's actually, for me, meditation can be used for many different things, but it can also be learned how to have courage and face what we feel like we feel we can't face.
Yeah, meditation is in all different forms has been amazing. I meditate as soon as I wake up, like laying in bed, eyes open. I have a series, and because I came from a background of family like yours, which a lot of people do, and I have triggers in the morning because my interruptions were in my sleep and when as a child. So I wake up, I have anxiety, and I just go into, I ground, I look up, I say my whole grateful thing, you know, whatever I need at the moment. But I have to start that way. And within like 30 seconds, I do feel a shift in the energy, that the tinglies and the anxiousness starts to go away. And then I go have coffee. So then I bring it back. I'm just kidding. But, would you take us into a little meditation with a blessing or whatever you want for, you know, the 5 minutes or so that you have? And then we'll also, just so people know, we'll be linking everything in Koshin's where to find him and all in the books and everything. And then also we'll be cutting this up separately. So if you just want to, you know, replay this meditation for yourself on a daily basis, you can. And let's see what we can move.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, so let's just take a moment to feel our feet on the ground. If you're sitting in a chair, just to feel your feet planted. And then if you're sitting in a chair, to kind of gently rock back and forth so that you can feel your sit bones. Those are those large, round bones that are in your glutes. And without those bones, we actually would not be able to sit up. So grateful. And then finding that ground so that we can move into our lower belly, about 2 inches below your belly button. And experiencing the softness there. See if you can just feel your breath moving your body there. For some of us, it's very hard to experience. So I like to put my hands there for a moment. So you can just feel your belly moving. And then taking a moment to just appreciate that you can have softness in your body and inviting that softness into your mind. And then seeing if you can open your shoulders a tiny bit, even like a millimeter, so that we're building on the grounding, softness, and openness, both in our body and our mind. And taking a moment to feel that openness, both in your body and in your mind. So grounded, soft, open, and now feeling your spine, elongating your spine, but really at the same time experiencing uprightness in your body. And all of us, depending on our bodies, have different availability. So see what's available to you. And how can you allow your mind to be upright? What are the qualities that feel a place of dignity and respect? So that your uprightness is living inside of that openness and softness and ground, providing good conditions to nurture a mind of compassion and wisdom. We'll sit like this just for a short moment together, appreciating. Thank you. May your life be filled with ease and joy.
Thank you so much. I felt a really good, like my legs, the energy started moving in my legs, like left and right, all the way up, which I haven't really felt before. I felt great. Thank you so much, Koshin, and good luck. Wishing you all the blessings for your book, Untangled, and for to you and your team and everybody was so gracious. And thank you for being here. And we'll link everything down below for people to find you. Many blessings to everybody. Wishing you well on your journey. Thank you so much.
Be well. Take care, Gina. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can find us online at theliberatedhealer.com, on Instagram at Liberated Healer Podcast, or on Facebook at The Liberated Healer. Give us a follow, subscribe, send us a message if you so feel, and thank you for your support. Podcast.